This is News in Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, Massachusetts Governor Romney wants penalties for those without health care, and Oprah gets dissed. Joining us today from our New York bureau, Robert George, editorial writer with the New York Post. Deborah Dickerson, author of the books An American Story and The End of Blackness, joins us from Albany, New York. And from the Spotland Production Studios in Nashville, Jeff Obafemi-Carr, founding director, artistic director of Amun Ra Theater, joins us as well. All right, folks, thanks very much. Let's get into something that we found very interesting, and that is that Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney unveiled a plan this week. He calls it an individual mandate, and he is proposing, as part of a broader plan to cover roughly 500,000 people who are uninsured. He's suggesting that if you don't have health care insurance, you would face a tax penalty and possibly even garnished wages in hopes of trying to correct the situation that he sees as problematic for his state. Jeff?
Yeah, I think, Ed, in a country, in a system, and even in a socio-political environment that seems to live by the dictum of punishing the victim, I see a few problems with this individual mandate proposal that Governor Romney has. Number one, the psychology of projection and displacement is alive and well. Governmental bureaucracy on all levels creates a system that makes it hard for poor people to be able to afford quality health care. And then when it calls for reform, and reform calls come into the play of the whole issue, the government looks to isolate examples of abuse to punish the same poor people even more. And number two, in order to have reform, more governmental bureaucracy has to be created to manage the reform itself, to manage taking away the income tax exemption of a whopping $175, I think, in Massachusetts. To create a division is going to create more bureaucracy that will garnish wages of people who don't pay bills. Now, I'm not saying that people who can afford to pay health care or for health care should freeload. I'm not speaking of the 100,000 plus in Massachusetts who are eligible but not enrolled in Medicaid, nor the 200,000 are making almost $50,000 a year. I'm talking about the 150,000 plus who are in the middle or on the bottom. And these are the people, the ones we call the least of these, our brethren, that I'm continually concerned always get lost in the debate.
And often, Robert George, let me throw this out. Often when we talk about this and we talk about it in the broad text, people assume that you either are talking about the haves and have-nots. But as we see, there are a burgeoning number of people who fall, as Jeff suggested, in the middle. And that's the idea that these are folks who work but do not have health care insurance, are trying to pay it. And under this, you would have to have some form of health insurance or agree to pay the medical bills out of your own pocket. That just doesn't seem to be realistic to me.
Well, it's problematic, and I do share Jeff's concern about how something like this is going to be administrated. But it's funny. I mean, I sort of come at it from partly a kind of a libertarian critique, where I don't necessarily think that you should be having a government instituting an individual mandate. However, one of the biggest problems that we have in our healthcare system right now is the added cost of emergency room care. And as I read this proposal, one of the things that Romney wants to do is if you show up at the emergency room, you basically will be offered, you know, this kind of basic plan to enroll in. And then if you refuse to do that, then there's a possibility of these penalties. Now, as I said, I'm in no way going to automatically sign up on this, but I do think Romney does have a point when he says, in our really rickety healthcare system, that one of the things that has to get under control is the exploding costs, and the emergency room care is a large factor in that.
Deborah, it seems to me, Robert suggests the idea of a rickety healthcare system. It seems to me that when you look at the United States today, this is a huge problem, frankly, that too few people are talking about and too few people are trying to get a hold of, and that is the skyrocketing cost of health care and just what's going to be done in the coming years.
Plans like this I find very depressing. It seems to me that he is showboating, trying to show his conservative credentials. It's just, you know, we talk about people who are making $50,000 a year. As a as a self-employed writer, I make more than $50,000 a year, and I was having to come out of pocket $900 a month for insurance for a family of four. Now that is ridiculous. To say that people who make $50,000 a year or even $100,000 a year and still have to come up with nearly, and it went up every year, it went up by another $50 every year. So to put this on the consumer is just the kind of thing that I just think creates so much anger. I am appalled by this kind of let them eat cake. People who can pay, you have a system where insurance comes with jobs, but if you're freelance like me or if you're at Burger King, you've got a job but you've got no benefits. So this, for the people, these millionaires who can afford care and don't pay, fine. But I think until you get up into about the $150,000 range, $900 a month for insurance is unbearable.
Well, one of the big problems, obviously, we have in the healthcare system is, you know, you have this sort of a third party situation where you do often have, you know, you've got the companies covering healthcare, and one of the things, and this isn't speaking to Romney's proposal, but one of the things that conservatives have said is if you have more of a direct link in terms of payment between patient and doctor, that's going to cause some of the overall cost to come down a little bit.
We need affordable insurance. If something is affordable and you choose not to have it, then you should be penalized. You should pay more than the actual cost of the visit, just to make sure that it's more reasonable for people to have the insurance. But when insurance is so unavailable, To say that people have to, you know, that there, this notion that there's some irresponsibility involved is just extremely, I'm thinking of a word I can't say on public radio, but it's
well, as I understand Romney's plan, there is an idea of state subsidies for those people that fall somewhere between the Medicaid allowable insurance and those who aren't able to afford other insurance. So there is still going to be a state subsidy involved.
All right, let me move on to something else that may indeed become controversial, and that's Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez is suggesting that what he would like to see is a move to actually mandate sentence guidelines for judges, particularly those who he says have been drifting toward lesser sentences since the Supreme Court ruled in January that judges do not have to follow sentencing guidelines that had been put in place and followed for nearly two decades. Well, when you take a look at this and hear this from the Attorney General's office, Jeff, what's your thought?
Well, this is, as a black man in America, first and foremost, I have to say that until I feel earnestly so that people like me are getting a fair shake in the criminal justice system, I can't do anything but lean towards leniency in sentencing. And this is a dual-edged sword of an issue. On one hand, we want a standard punishment for a crime. And on the other hand, with minimum sentencing, we run into the quandary of not being able to look at a person's individual circumstance and judge accordingly. The growth in the small growth since this issue has come up in shorter sentences is not at an epidemic level. So I think Congress should back off this issue and let the system work now as it is, and allow water to find its own level. And after all, a judge's decision is going to be subject to reversal if an appeals court finds the sentence unreasonable anyway.
Yeah, and I do think, I tend to, obviously, I fall on the conservative side of this issue, generally speaking. However, I do think, given that these Supreme Court decisions only, you know, basically, you know, came down, less than 6 months ago, I think Gonzalez may be a little bit premature here. We should, rather than just look at a couple of cases here and there, we should maybe wait a full year to see if there really is judicial abuse in the sentencing.
Deborah? Oh, I think that's Deborah coughing on us. So we'll let her get
her throat. She's getting ready.
Let me clear my throat.
About the healthcare.
I was going to say, she's so caught up on that.
Hey, be careful, well, Deborah. Don't want you to.
As usual, in this group, I'm the one who's on the far left, I guess. I think that this notion that he's going to legislate from the AG's office and basically The Supreme Court has spoken on the legality of that, and here he's trying to, he doesn't seem to have a lot of faith in the balance of powers, and doesn't seem to be very deferential to the Supreme Court, and the feeling of judges all over the country that this it went against so many of their consciences, having to adhere to their these guidelines in cases where they felt that attention to individual circumstances was warranted. I think it's more frightening, sort of overreaching from the right wing. I find it to be a scary prospect, as if the kind of people who face these kind of charges, you know, as if they're getting some sort of an easy ride. I think that there's a problem with over-sentencing and overcharging and mistreatment, especially of poor people of color at every step through the system. So this is a person that I find scary.
Well, there's also a question of exactly what impact more congressional legislation is going to have, because as Deborah referred to, I mean, the Supreme Court said you could not make these mandatory sentences compulsory, but you could make them advisory. So it seems to me that still gives, even if Congress does step in again, it still gives the judges a certain amount of latitude.
And Jeff, the idea that here again is a question of whether or not we are seeing a look from the administration's perch in asking Congress to get involved in what conceivably could be called areas they should not step into. Does that smack to you of the blurring of the lines at all?
Yeah, I think it's a blurring of the lines. We definitely have separation and should have separations of our branches of government. But it's very interesting because I see so much contradiction all the way throughout. Everyone always talks about separating the government. Everyone talks about bringing the size of the government down and keeping the government out of every other area. But once again, we have these proposals coming out that want to kind of put fingers into everybody else's business. And it just creates a web that is totally confusing. And in the end, at the end of the day, who are the people who end up paying for it? Once again, the least of these, my brethren. It's the people I know who got caught up on a minimum sentence issue and ended up having to go to jail for conspiracy, and they were just riding along in a car with somebody, or somebody who got caught up in a three strikes law. So these kind of things always affect negatively the poor, the underserved, and the minority person. And I think that we've got to figure out some kind of middle ground here.
All right, here's a quick story of just as a reminder how far we've come, and perhaps if this story is in fact totally true, perhaps how far we have not. This comes from Paris, as reported in the New York Post, and it's about our friend Oprah Winfrey. It said that last weekend she wanted to dash into, and it depends on which neighborhood you live in. You may say Hermes.
Hermes.
You know, just depends on where. It just depends on where you live. But nonetheless, it's a high-end store known well for their handbags in this country. But nonetheless, she went in to try to buy a watch for her dinner partner, Tina Turner, that she was going to sit down and have dinner with that evening. She asked, called ahead to see if she could come in after the store's closing. She would arrive just a few minutes after that to purchase the watch. And the store clerk told her when she arrived that she could not come in. And the store manager came out to reinforce the clerk's refusal. And there was question initially whether or not they recognized Oprah, and it's said that they said, yes, we know who you are. So is this an idea of how far we've come, or how far we haven't? It's said that Oprah hasn't played the race card, but reported here that she said if it were Britney or Barbara Streisand, you would have opened the door.
You know,
well,
actually, knowing how
the race card. And it's, I don't understand. They did recognize her, so they wouldn't let her in. What sense does that make? Well, I think, I don't understand, even if that were true, I don't think I would say that. Obviously, they didn't recognize her, and they didn't let her in because she looked like a, I'm assuming she didn't go in a fur coat and all that stuff.
No, she did not go in full makeup and hair.
Right,
and it's said
like
that
an average black person, and they didn't let her in. And it's you know, people like Oprah and Bill Cosby, they're always thrown up by folks to say, see how what there's no racism, black people are doing just fine. But it's when something like this happens to someone of that level that we get a it's a bittersweet sort of vindication. It's like, see, we you know. Without her microphone and her camera crew, you know the old joke, what do you call a black person with a PhD, you know? Mm. So I think it's when things like this happen, it's awful, but it's just a nice little bit of vindication.
Well, first of all,
for those of you who don't know the old joke, that would be the N-word with a PhD.
The N-word, right.
Please move on.
Yeah. Nader, Ralph Nader. No, but, well, you know, there are two, I think, two things here. First of all, we're talking about the French here, and I'm not even sure if they would even let Britney Spears in. So, but you know, that aside, they also put out this pseudo apology where they said Oprah and her team were reminded that there was a private event going on, and they weren't able to cater to her and so forth. Whatever the issue is, I mean, I would focus more on the fact that this is an incredibly snobbish French who are incredibly elitist to Americans of just about any color, and I'll just leave it at that.
Okay, Jeff, with about 30 seconds.
I'll invoke an Ice Cube, the intro to an Ice Cube song from a Death Certificate. It just kind of said over and over again, here's what they think about you. Here's what they think about you. It's very interesting because, you know, we seem to think we have some kind of insulation when we have a little bit of fame and fortune, but it happens to us. The report that I read said that one of the reasons why they didn't allow her access was because they were having a problem, quote, with North Africans,
right,
or whatever that meant. So I guess Oprah, without being dressed up, made up, etc., reminds them of a North African. But obviously there was a problem with North Africans, Western Africans, and all kind of Africans. And I think that perhaps this will spur some action
and
from
Oprah,
the
Oprah,
community of fame.
By the time dinner came around, Oprah was singing to Tina Turner, "They Better Be Good to Me."
Yeah. All right. Robert George, Deborah Dickerson, and Jeff Obafemi-Carr, thanks for joining us. Greatly appreciated.
It was fun.
Thank you.